expect to move pretty quickly on that project.
Interior officials want a fast track to opening ANWR. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, March 8th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, an Alaska Native Woman's Interior Department appointment is still on hold.
No Native person should be asked to sell off their birthright in order to serve in the administration.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by
Northern Air Cargo, providing freight transportation to 13 rural Alaska communities. NAC offers a variety of service options to get the freight where it needs to be. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956.
Planning today for a gift down the road builds a legacy of support for the media you treasure. Thank you for considering this public radio station in your estate planning. You can talk to your financial advisor or contact your public radio station to learn more. Thank you.
A top Interior Department official today said the Trump administration is working to speed up the process leading to oil development in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. Interior Deputy Secretary David Bernhardt and Assistant Secretary Joe Balash spoke at an industry gathering in Anchorage this morning after spending several days in North Slope communities. Bernhardt said Interior will kick off the regulatory process required to hold an oil lease sale in the refuge in the next few weeks.
We expect to move pretty quickly on that project.
Congress is requiring that two lease sales be held in the refuge's 1002 area within the next 7 years. But when he was asked exactly when the first lease sale will happen, Bernhardt didn't answer directly. The deputy secretary noted he issued a memo saying that environmental reviews must be completed in a year.
You know, if you were looking for a time frame, Joe might tell me that that's a little ambitious. But I would expect that, you know, we're going to start this process. We're starting this process very, very soon, and I take my memos very, very seriously.
Earlier this week, Senator Dan Sullivan reportedly said he wants the first oil lease sale in the refuge to take place next year, the year before President Donald Trump must seek re-election. Environmental groups are alarmed by the push to rush the lease sale. Nicole Whittington Evans with the Wilderness Society in Anchorage believes it's impossible to do an adequate environmental review in such a short time frame.
Their haste will not provide sufficient time to evaluate relevant information or make informed decisions, and we will be ensuring that they hear from us about that at every step.
Whittington Evans says her group's position hasn't changed since Congress allowed drilling in the refuge. Like most other environmental groups, they don't think oil development should happen there at all. Alaskan Tara Sweeney is President Trump's pick to be the next Assistant Interior Secretary for Indian Affairs. But her nomination has been held up for months at the Office of Government Ethics, an independent agency in the executive branch. Senators Lisa Murkowski and Dan Sullivan say the problem holding up Sweeney's case would be a barrier for many Alaska Natives who might be appointed to high office. Alaska Public Media Washington correspondent Liz Ruskin reports.
Back in October, Sweeney's nomination was widely applauded around Alaska and among Native American groups. She's Inupiaq and an executive vice president of Arctic Slope Regional Corporation. Sweeney is also one of the 13,000 shareholders of ASRC. And Murkowski says that stock seems to have stumped the Government Ethics Office.
I tell you, I am so just beside myself at what she has had to go through for 5 months now.
The Office of Government Ethics is charged with making sure administration appointees don't have conflicts of interest. The office offered no comment for this story. Sweeney also declined to comment. Normally, if nominees hold stock in an industry regulated by the agency where they're hoping to serve, they can resolve that potential conflict by selling the stock. Murkowski says that's not appropriate for shareholders of Alaska Native corporations whose stock is issued to eligible Native residents or inherited.
No Native person should be asked to sell off or give up their birthright in order to serve in the administration.
Another option is recusal, where Sweeney would agree to stay out of decisions that directly impact ASRC. Murkowski says the ethics office has been slow to come up with an agreement for Sweeney to sign. The senator says she's heard an agreement is coming out shortly.
But we've heard that before. We heard that before Christmas. We heard that around Thanksgiving time.
Senator Dan Sullivan says Sweeney's job, or the job she's supposed to be in, is vitally important for Alaska. The Assistant Secretary for Indian Affairs maintains the government's relationship with the tribes and oversees land held in trust. Sweeney would oversee the Bureau of Indian Affairs, the Office of Self-Governance, and the Office of Indian Gaming. Sullivan says he has faith the ethics office will get things back on track with a recusal agreement.
The precedent can't be that at the end of the day they're not going to allow an entire class of American citizens to serve in their government at high levels. That can't be the answer here.
Murkowski says, as far as she knows, the only other Alaska Native person appointed to a position requiring Senate confirmation was Morris Thompson of Fairbanks, who became head of the BIA. He was confirmed in 1973. Before the Office of Government Ethics was established. If Sweeney's nomination is sent to the Senate soon, she'll be among more than 100 still waiting for approval. Reporting from Washington, I'm Liz Ruskin.
Whether the state pays healthcare providers on time for Medicaid recipients is in question. The state has requested that lawmakers include money for it in a bill making its way through the legislature, but concerns over the amount the state has spent on Medicaid this year led to the funding not being included so far. Alaska Public Media and KTOO's Andrew Kitchenman reports.
Since Governor Bill Walker expanded Medicaid eligibility in 2015, it's grown a lot. From 123,000 people covered by Medicaid and Denali Kid Care before the expansion to 200,000 today. That has led to costs growing faster than projections. This year, the state added $100 million in additional Medicaid expense after the legislature passed the budget. If the legislature doesn't include at least $40 million of that money in a bill that the House is considering, then the state will suspend Medicaid payments to providers as soon as mid-April. And for smaller hospitals, that may prevent some from paying contractors or making payroll. Becky Holtberg is president and CEO of the Alaska State Hospital and Nursing Home Association.
Many of our small hospitals rely significantly on Medicaid. If Medicaid suspends payment, they will not have sufficient reserves to last until the end of the fiscal year. Some of them may only have sufficient reserves to last a number of weeks.
Holtberg sent a letter to lawmakers last week telling them that some hospitals and nursing facilities have less than 30 days cash on hand. She wrote that providers were concerned at the lack of urgency around the issue.
We don't want to be alarmist, but we felt an obligation to point out that there are very real consequences to suspending payments to Medicaid providers.
The bill that could be used as the vehicle to make the payment is known as the Fast Track Supplemental. It's a bill that's meant to provide funding that is more urgent than the rest of the budget. Generally, the four co-chairs of the House and Senate Finance Committee must agree on what's in a supplemental. Senate Finance Co-Chair Anna McKinnon says Medicaid is a source of contention because of the size of the request. She notes that the state is spending down its savings due to a gap of at least $2.5 billion between what it spends and what it raises in revenue.
The Department of Health and Social Services is spending a lot of money on Medicaid and is not living within their means. So it's a concern.
McKinnon says lawmakers are listening to healthcare providers.
If we have a problem, as Alaskans, we will face that problem together, and we understand that there would be concern from organizations, general practice providers, hospitals, if the department did not have the ability to pay for the services that have already been utilized. So we get it, but what does the legislature do when the department is spending outside of its budget authority?
State Department of Health and Social Services Assistant Commissioner Shonda O'Brien says the need for additional funding has come from enrollment by those who would have been eligible for Medicaid before Walker expanded it.
We believe that, you know, the economy is the largest driver in why that is. And so we knew last year that we were going to have a need for additional funding, and we were on record saying that last year, that the amount of money that we were asking for in the budget wasn't going to be sufficient for what we thought we were going to need.
She says the uncertain direction of the federal Medicaid policies also made it difficult to budget this year.
Lots of discussions took place over the summer with our congressional delegates, and so we weren't certain how some of those things would impact our budget in addition to what we already were seeing in growth.
O'Brien says she expects that the state's Medicaid projections for next year's budget will be accurate, and the state won't need to ask for another large supplement next year. In Juneau, I'm Andrew Kitchenman.
The Center for Biological Diversity is suing the Trump administration for not granting an Endangered Species Act listing for the Pacific walrus. The environmental advocacy group filed the lawsuit today in U.S. District Court. In October, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service decided the Pacific walrus didn't warrant additional federal protections. The agency said the population appeared stable and had demonstrated an ability to adapt to changing conditions. But some conservation groups say the decision was politically motivated and not based on the best available science. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a Sitka mother who fled an abusive marriage faces kidnapping charges.
Because as a parent, you know, that's your main goal, is to keep your children safe and happy at all times. You know, that should be the main goal of any parent.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. If you love a good mystery, Thursday nights on Alaska Public Media TV is the place for you. Join us every week as we search for clues, put the pieces together, and figure out who done it. Mystery Thursdays only on Alaska Public Media TV.
A Sitka woman is in prison pending extradition to the United Kingdom to face charges that she abducted her children to the United States. Since her arrest in Sitka last April, India Ford has been treated as a criminal. U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson will ultimately decide if Ford has to return to face abduction charges in the U.K. Family advocates say this case is not unique and points to a huge gulf between the rule of law and the actions of women desperate to protect themselves and their families. KCAW's Robert Woolsey reports.
Grace Harbor Church is probably one of Sitka's largest. It's a bright space with windows overlooking the wide expanse of Sitka Sound. A contemporary evangelical congregation is led by a rock band with lyrics projected on the gleaming white walls. Today, they are praying for one of their own.
We're praying for India while she is being held in custody, that in the lives of the others with whom she is working with, that God can work through her as well. And so
anyone who meets India Ford and the Ford family realizes right away that India is not a criminal. The person who has caused the harm isn't going to jail, but she is.
I meet with Pastor Paul MacArthur and India Ford in the church conference room. Ford is a 34-year-old British expat, now a legal permanent resident in the U.S. She bakes cakes for a living. There is a solemn feel in the room. After 8 months in supervised house arrest, Ford is flying to Anchorage to surrender to U.S. Marshals and to enter prison. She has no idea how long she'll be there. This church is her emotional sanctuary.
I just know that there has to be a reason for all of this. And I don't know what that reason is. And I know that, you know, nobody knows what the reasons are and that he has plans for everybody. But I do know that I'm not alone.
Ford has lived in Sitka for 2.5 years with her husband, Kenny Ford, a Coast Guardsman, and three children, Grace, Ava, and Noah. This last is her child with Kenny. Before moving to Sitka, she lived in Kent, England, where Grace and Ava were born. Her relationship with the girl's father, however, was short-lived and turbulent. In frequent drug-fueled rages over several years, he physically assaulted her, prompting one British policeman to warn her that she was in danger of her life. Although Ford encouraged her partner to seek help, nothing worked. She made up her mind to leave him.
And it got to a point one day when he was being particularly abusive, and Grace and Ava were both there. And I sat there and looked at my girls and just realized that the only thing I'm doing is letting them think it's okay to be treated like this by somebody. And that was the point when I realized, you know, like, I'm done, and the other ended the relationship.
But ending the relationship did not end the abuse. The British courts awarded Ford custody of Grace and Ava, then ages 5 and 4, and granted her former partner visitation, or contact. The arrangement proved unsuccessful.
Throughout 2012 to 2015, contact was started and stopped. He was arrested for battery against Ava back in 2014. That was investigated for quite some time and then dropped because there was not enough evidence, despite me taking pictures and documenting it with social services and the right channels. And it just went backwards and forwards like that. And the children would come home terrified and, you know, begging me not to send them to him anymore.
Spread out on the conference room table in Grace Harbor Church are Ford's legal files. There's also a large binder filled with records of all the social service and therapeutic interventions Ford obtained for her daughters during the 3 years they lived under the British court's child arrangements. Despite her efforts, she could not get traction in the British system to wrest herself and her children from her ex-partner, as he grew even more violent and unstable. She booked a ticket for herself and Grace and Ava to travel to Virginia in the fall of 2015 to visit her own father, a trip she had made often in the past. She says she was fully intending to return, but the plans changed. The girls' last contact with their biological father was 2 weeks before their departure for the U.S.
He was particularly aggressive and upset that day, and I asked him not to speak to me like that in front of the children. He said a few choice words to me and then told me that he was going to kill me and take the children to another country. And at that point, you know, I was like, no one's helping me.
Ford traveled legally with Grace and Ava to Virginia on October 2nd, 2015. 10 days later, when she did not return home, Ford became an international fugitive.
There is a misfit between the contours of the law, which is based on acting reasonably, and what can happen neurologically and emotionally if someone's experienced trauma.
David Volek has practiced family law for 21 years. He's been a tribal judge for 10 of them. While Volek is not involved in this case, he has ample experience with situations where the law seems to disadvantage the people it's designed to protect.
Particularly in difficult relationships, domestic violence relationships or batter relationships, it could end up with results upside down, where the victim of the battering and the power and the control ends up being on the end of punishment.
There's also this. A pattern abuser may not stop just because his victims have escaped. The father of the girls never submitted a petition with the Hague Convention on International Child Abduction to recover them. He's only filed kidnapping charges. Ford feels he's just trying to punish her, and facing an indefinite future behind bars, it's working. Author Lisbeth Meredith is a woman's advocate in Anchorage. In her book, Pieces of Me, she tells a similar story. Although she ultimately recovered her daughters, Meredith says she was always a step behind her ex-husband as he manipulated the legal systems of two countries.
We have a lot more research that tells us the incredible damning impacts domestic violence and abuse has on children, whether they're preborn or, you know, even infants. It's debilitating to children's futures. Knowing all of that, we still are not able to make quite the adjustments I think we need to prevent victims from being exploited.
And then there are those who lie. or experience a sudden religious conversion to tease out an advantage in a domestic dispute. Paul MacArthur has been pastor of Grace Harbor for 3 decades. It's a job that often involves him intimately in family crises, including domestic violence. He parses the truth every day in his role as a counselor, and he doesn't believe India Ford is posing. It's the legal systems of the United States and the United Kingdom which are bothering him.
And then the more details that you learn of the story, every one of them makes it even more of an amazing thing that such a thing should be happening in two countries that are sophisticated enough to understand basic justice.
Ford has never been able to present the evidence of her or her children's abuse to a judge in the United States. As far as federal courts are concerned, she must return to face the charges in the UK. The only way to escape extradition now is to appeal to U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson, the first person with power over Ford's future who can fully weigh her story. If Tillerson denies the appeal and Ford is extradited to stand trial, her girls will remain in the U.S. with her husband, Kenny, whom she met at a Toby Keith concert in 2014 and has now rebuilt her family around. Grace and Ava are thriving in their new life in Sitka, a life Ford wants for them, even if she can't have it for herself.
And I have had more support in Sitka in this very short amount of time that I've been here than I have had my whole life, where I've been anywhere else. And this place to me feels like home. And my children's home, and my children are so happy here. And the difference in them is amazing. I mean, they've gone from timid, scared children that were just terrified of everything to happy, outgoing, confident girls who just, I mean, the difference is just astounding. It is truly astounding.
Ford's residency status, if she's extradited, is uncertain. Attorneys I consulted say that under the Trump administration, immigration is a wild card. The only certainty is that Ford will do anything in her power to keep her daughters away from the man who abused them.
Because as a parent, you know, that's your main goal, is to keep your children safe and happy at all times. You know, that should be the main goal of any parent.
India Ford surrendered to federal marshals on January 8th and remains in custody at the Highland Mountain Correctional Center in Eagle River, Alaska. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
First National Bank Alaska, offering online and mobile services to help Alaskans and their businesses bank on the go. Learn how experience and local knowledge make the difference at fnbaalaska.com.
The Bristol Bay Subsistence Regional Advisory Council will discuss possible federal subsistence fish and shellfish proposals and other subsistence-related issues, and invites public participation at a meeting March 13th and 14th starting at 8:30 a.m. at Dolly's Hall in Naknek. More at 800-478-1456. This message sponsored by the Office of Subsistence Management.
Fairbanks Representative David Guttenberg was taken to the hospital from the state capitol at about 2:30 p.m. today. Michael Mason, a spokesman for Guttenberg's caucus, says the lawmaker had an unknown medical emergency. Mason says Guttenberg was conscious, talking, and in good spirits before he was taken away. The emergency interrupted hearings on the state's operating budget in the House Finance Committee, on which Guttenberg sits. The committee plans to resume work on the budget later next week. 5 mushers have reached the Iditarod halfway point. Your Leifsef Olsom arrived first at about 8:30 last night. He was followed by Lars Monson, who arrived this morning. Nicholas Petit, Mitch Seavey, and Jeff King pulled into the checkpoint this afternoon. Petit and Seavey have both taken their mandatory 24-hour rests. Less than 10 mushers out of the 67 competing in this year's Iditarod are Alaska Native. And the only Inupiat musher to win the Iditarod, John Baker of Kotzebue, is not racing this year. KNOM's Davis Hovey reports from the trail.
Before the ceremonial start of the 2018 Iditarod on Saturday, veteran musher Katil Raitan of Kaktovik remarked on how fewer Inupiaq people are dog mushing nowadays.
One of my main motivations is now is to pass along the traditions to my sons.
It's not that many young Inupiaq people that are dogmashing anymore. It's hard to get into it, so keep our team going and keep the traditions alive. That's very meaningful, and I think lots of people have also appreciate that we are trying to do that.
Although Raitan's son Vebjorn completed the other 1,000-mile sled dog race, the Yukon Quest, in February, he is not racing in this year's Iditarod. Yupik Musher and longtime resident of Bethel, Pete Kaiser, figures it's harder for some who live in smaller rural communities to afford the Iditarod.
Oh, it's a really expensive sport, so kind of have to have all your ducks in a row, and it's really not a hobby or anything else. It's a lifestyle, and it requires my time 365 days a year. So, you know, and when you have other things going on, like family and kids, and you also kind of need a job to support this job, it gets very complicated.
Mike Williams, Jr. of Akiak agrees with Kaiser, saying that the cost is prohibitive for some Alaska Native mushers. But despite that, Williams sees more and more Native people mushing in his hometown.
Back home, there's more young mushers starting teams and racing, and that's a really good feeling and good to see. And as far as Iditarod goes, doesn't look like there's a whole lot of Native mushers.
Traditionally, sled dog mushing was an activity many Native Alaskans enjoyed before it became a competitive sport, which Williams, a Yupik musher, knows better than most. Since he was a boy, Williams has been training sled dogs with his father, Mike Williams Sr., who has completed 15 Iditarods, his last one in 2013. Kaiser, on the other hand, has 4 top 10 finishes in his 8 Iditarods. When asked if he would be the next Alaska Native to win the Iditarod since John Baker, the 4-time Kuskokwim 300 champ said,
I don't know, you know, it's hard to know. We're definitely giving it our best shot, but, you know, we're only 300 miles into this, so hard to know right now, and there's a lot of really good teams. I'd love to win, but we'll do the best we can.
At last update of the leaderboard, Kaiser was running with 14 dogs in 12th position. Reporting on the Iditarod Trail in Takotna, I'm Davis Hovey.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. Tonight's stories can be found at our website, alaskapublic.org. We had reports tonight from Elizabeth Harbaugh in Anchorage, Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Andrew Kitchenman, Elizabeth Jenkins, and Aiden Ling in Juneau, Robert Woolsey in Sitka, and Davis Hovey on the Iditarod Trail. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Wesley Early is our web editor. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, taking pride in its strong ties to Alaska's communities.
The University of Alaska Anchorage is investing in Alaska by equipping students with the knowledge and tools for academic success. These students will go on to be the doctors, nurses, teachers, engineers, and artists of Alaska who shape the future of the state by bringing new solutions, inventions, and ideas to the table. Amazing stories are being written every day at UAA. More information at uaa.alaska.edu/admissions. This message sponsored by UAA.
Did you know while exposed to secondhand smoke, every breath you take can damage your heart? Cells lining blood vessels become swollen and inflamed. Plaque builds narrowing blood vessels, and clots can form, robbing the heart of oxygen. Exposure to secondhand smoke increases your heart disease risk by up to 30%. It's your heart protected. This message sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Quitline, 1-800-QUIT-NOW.
This is statewide news on Alaska Public Media.